This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Our show originates from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge, and underwritten signature sponsor is the Mayor's Office of East Baton Rouge Parish. And we are joined today by Congressman Charles Melancon. If your number is 877-217-5757, emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. Yesterday was a tape show, and it was thought to be a slow news day. But as we know, Saturday the whole world changed, and I got back last night and would have been back earlier, but Robin Dow was gone yesterday, Jeff Palermo was gone, and I wasn't going to produce the show, host it, and take lots of calls, as would be expected on a day like this. But we're here today to talk about what happened Saturday and what's happening at the Republican Convention and how this applies to the 2020 presidential election. November 5th is 112 days away. 16 weeks from today, we'll elect a president of the United States of America. 112 days away. 112 days. And again, your number is 877-217-5757. Emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. Tanya Nyman was scheduled to be our leadoff guest today, and she is an authority on charter schools and lives here in Baton Rouge. And she has an opinion somewhat different than the guest last week, Caroline Romer. And tomorrow, Tanya will be with us. And we opted to change our schedule because of the events that are going on contemporaneously. And as we know, a 20-year-old young man, Thomas Michael Crooks from Butler, PA, he actually lived in Bethel Park. He somehow, some way, got on top of a roof 148 yards away from former President Trump with an assault weapon and got off six rounds. And one of them nicked the president's ear. And if Donald Trump had not turned his head, he would have been killed. And it would have been a gory mess in front of millions of people watching, if not billions, on television. And of course, there were several hundred at the event in Butler, Pennsylvania. Now, it'll take a while to sift through this, but how that man got to the position he was and in a spot where he could kill one of the most prominent people in the world is amazing with the Secret Service protection that presidents receive. But there have been at least 15 attempts on the lives of presidents, former presidents, presidents-elect, and five of them have been fatal. 1865, Abraham Lincoln. 1881, James Garfield. 1901, William McKinley. 1963, John Kennedy. And 1968, Robert Kennedy. So it's been 56 years since a president or presidential aspirant was killed seeking the office or holding the office, and it's been 43 years since Ronald Reagan was wounded. And I think many thought that it could never happen again, but of course it can. And we'd like your input as always, 877-217-5757, and Congressman Melancon is at the ready. And before we get his review of what happened, let's go to the tape. Here is Donald Trump, another one of the rallies, on a sunny, beautiful day in the Granite State. And here's how it sounded, and you would never have known that perhaps an assassination was in the offing. But here is the clip of what will now become one of those moments in American history that is seared in the memory bank.
And that comes right from the government services, comes right out of Border Patrol. Take a look at that. So that arrow is the lowest amount of illegal immigration ever in recorded history into our country. And then the worst president in the history of our country took over. And look what happened to our country. Probably 20 million people. And you know, that's a little bit old, that chart. That chart's a couple of months old. And if you want to really see something that's sad, take a look at what happened.
That's how it sounded. And Trump barely got down, but he did. And at 78 years old, he has now risen to his feet with Secret Service agents all around him, but his bloodied face, with him shaking his fist, and you can see him mouthing the words, fight, those are seared in the memory bank, and he will be tough to beat come November 5th. And by the way, a listener has already corrected me, the most enlightened audience in radio. New Hampshire is a Granite State, not Pennsylvania. Butler, PA is one of those small towns. It's 265 miles from Laurel, Maryland, where George Wallace was shot in 1972, paralyzed for life. And George Wallace was the front runner. He had the most delegates at the time he was shot for the Democratic presidential nomination in 1972. But he was wounded so badly, his campaign ultimately ended, as you can imagine, immediately ended, and he didn't get the nomination. George McGovern did, and McGovern ended up losing 49 states. Charlie Malosa, you've been around politics for a long time, both in the state and at the federal level, and your thoughts about where we are right now.
I guess the best thing I can say about what occurred this weekend was it's a sad day for our country anytime a presidential assassination is attempted, and this being no different, whether you're for or against the candidate that the attempt came on. I kind of lost for words. It's one of those things Peach and I were talking about. She says, what do you say? This conspiracy theories are out there all over the place. Melania's getting blamed. Trump's even getting some. He did it for himself, for a show. Hillary did it. SEAL Team 6 was part of this deal. I mean, it's all over the place. And, of course, with the social media, it just exponentially grows so quickly that's scary, that part of it. And, of course, with all the untruths that have been said in these campaigns and this presidential campaign, you don't know who to believe and what's going to happen or what has happened. Marjorie Taylor Greene already started, doesn't trust that the president or that the CIA or the FBI or any of those agencies are going to tell the truth. What happened to our faith in our government and to our agencies in this last couple of years is scary. I still have faith in them. I dealt with them. But the rank and file, I guess, in the country are not sure. There's been a question mark placed out there.
Peter Baker in the New York Times yesterday wrote, when President Reagan was shot by an attention-seeking drifter in 1981, the country united behind its injured leader. The teary-eyed Democratic Speaker of the House, Thomas P. Tip O'Neill, went to the hospital room of the Republican president, held his hands, kissed his head, got on his knees, and prayed for him. But the assassination attempt against former President Donald J. Trump, writes Mr. Baker, seems more likely to tear America further apart than bring it together. Within minutes of the shooting, the air was filled with anger, bitterness, suspicion, and recrimination. Fingers were pointed, conspiracy theories advanced, and a country already bristling with animosity fractured even more. And that's where we are, and this has political implications, and obviously people are sympathetic for a person who was shot, and Trump is likely to benefit politically from this. Now, we do have 16 weeks to go, but right now, the betting averages in Las Vegas, as I speak, Trump 67% chance of winning, Biden 18%, Harris 7%.
It was right over 50% about a week ago, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was tit for tat. You talk about the angst that was on the social media following the shooting. If you look at the footage, there were people flipping the birds to the camera, and you could hear them screaming at the camera. Some of the profanities instead of, oh, my God, he's been shot, let's worry about him. Anger started coming out.
Inevitably, when somebody is killed of prominence, it's hard to believe that a 20-year-old loser could kill the most famous person on the planet.
Yeah, especially.
And remember John Connolly when he was shot in Dallas. He said, they're going to kill us all. And in that case, there, in my view, probably was a conspiracy, although I do think Oswald was involved in the conspiracy. But usually people like Oswald, who was 24, and this guy who was 20, go down the list, John Wilkes Booth, Carl Austin Weiss, they're almost always white guys under the age of 30 who take the lives or try to take the lives of people in prominence, political leaders, Arthur Bremer, John Hinckley, both of whom are now on the streets, by the way.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
Well, you know, they served their time.
They went to hospitals. One of them, Hinckley, and you're right, Bremer served his time. We'll be back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. And it was 25 years ago today, by the way, that John F. Kennedy Jr. was killed in a plane crash. And if not for that, he quite possibly would have been president himself in this celebrity age. You can imagine how difficult he would have been to beat. And he was not only famous for his father and his mother, but he also was one of the most compelling visual figures on the planet, a man who could bench press his weight, I suspect. And he was taken out on July 16th, 1999. He, his wife, and his wife's sister died in a plane crash. Kennedy was the pilot over Martha's Vineyard going to a wedding, flying out on a Friday night. And that was the end of the trail. And Kennedy was all of 38 years old. So what would have been in store? We'll never know. But we ended up electing Donald Trump, who had never run for office before. And he is now the overwhelming favorite to win the election come November 5th. 877-217-5757. One of the real rising stars in Democratic politics is the governor of Pennsylvania. I believe that's the Quaker state, isn't it?
Yes.
Isn't that Quaker state? Yeah. Josh Shapiro. And at 51 years old, he took the stage and looked presidential after the shooting that killed a person in the crowd who was there to pay support to Donald Trump and stepped in front of his family, saving their lives, and he gave his life. And so Shapiro's remarks were compelling, to say the least. And this is a Democratic governor speaking on behalf of a man who was at a rally for a Republican former president. Again, Charlie Malasaw in the House. He served in the U.S. Congress, ran for Senate in the year of 2012, and lost to David Bruce Vitter, but also served in the Louisiana House of Representatives. He's been around Louisiana politics since he was a driver for Edwin Washington Edwards so many moons ago. And at your age, 77,
yeah,
you look fabulous.
Well, thanks. I don't always feel fabulous. When I talk to my friends, it's usually about they start with their doctor's appointments and what the doctors told them recently. So I try and stay away from that. I had one of my staffers, she and her husband and her son came by to visit Saturday. And the first thing I told them was, okay, here, I'm not going to talk about any of my maladies. Let's talk about y'all and your son's cricket and soccer and whatever else. When you get home to visit your mom in Crowley, you get an earful there, I'm sure. So
again,
anyway.
877-217-5757, Robin Dow producing, and I think I disconnected Abalero, who's first-time caller, and we always like those. So if you call back, we'll put you ahead of the pack. But there are some lines open, and you can, of course, go to talk at talklouisiana.org. David in Atlanta, what's your question for Congressman Malasaw?
Mr. Malasaw, thank you for years of good service, but I'm a troubled person, and I need maybe some advice. You know, Senator McCain flew a combat aircraft into a combat zone and served 5.5 years in a Hanoi Hilton. Trump said he's not a hero because he was captured. Now, Trump was in the wrong place at the wrong time. His body was covered by Secret Service agents, and he raised his fist. Now the Republican Party wants to turn him into the next Audie Murphy. Isn't this...
All right, David, that's enough. This is not a time for
it that. Is sad.
No. But Donald Trump has many issues, but on this one, He acted appropriately, and he has to this point. But he is a person who, as we know, I can only imagine what his speech will be like. Hopefully it'll be a speech of unity. And if it is, I think his chances of winning the election go up. But yesterday he chose the most rabid right-winger he could find, J.D. Vance, who's at 39, exactly half the age of Trump. He does turn 40.
A person that will do what he tells him to do.
And optically, he was going to nominate a guy. He wasn't going to put Tom Cotton, who's 6'5", on the ticket. He chose 5'7", J.D.
So
Vance.
He looks like the bigger person.
And
he's
Trump,
the president.
Trump looks to be 4 or 5 inches taller than this dude, but if he really was 6'3", he'd be 8 inches taller.
Well, he's what, about 6'1", I believe?
Yeah, he says he's 6'3", but I think he probably never was 6'3". Probably was 6'2", and now over time,
course,
as we know, yes, he's probably around 6 feet tall.
Of course, I used to be 5'10", and I don't think I'm there anymore. So it's with age. And
I read that men, they start losing 3/8 of an inch of height every decade after 40.
Well, that explains the 5'8" instead of the 5'10".
And some, as we know, they go down. But Biden... who in his prime was 6 feet tall, he looks to be about an inch shorter than Trump. Let's say he's 5'11". Now, Trump's probably around 6 feet tall. It says he's 6'3", but hey, he wouldn't be the first man to lie about his height.
Well, I was about to say, the first man or the first president or the first former president. And that's the thing, I guess, the conundrum that I have with the people that support Trump. He has not shown any moral character or substance. He doesn't tell the truth. You go back and you look at people that were running for political office through the ages. If they had a indiscretion, if there was anything that was on their record, that became the topic of discussion. And here we've got a guy that's running that has a record that of moral, ethical, legal wrongdoings. It just amazes me.
Chuck in Spillman, Louisiana. You're on with Charlie Malasa. Hi, Chuck.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning to your distinguished guest. Quick question.
Thank you. Good morning.
The kid in Michigan that shot up the school, his parents were ultimately charged and held accountable for supplying him the weapon that he used. Well, it's been proven by the FBI that this shooter's daddy gave him the so-called AR-15 to go target practicing.
Should he be charged? He may. He may. AR-15s are weapons of war.
They are weapons of war. The rifles and the equipment made today, it used to be you had to pay premium for accurate rifles. Not that they weren't, the lower models weren't accurate, but what they're manufacturing today is a weapon and an accurate weapon.
Patrick at Ennis-Wald Estates. Thank you, Chuck. Patrick, you're on with Congressman Malasa.
Hey, Jim, you said that it's usually crazy white men that do these assassinations.
I don't know if I used the word crazy, but I said young white men.
Yeah, but I wanted to remind you, remember Gerald Ford was almost
Those were white women.
White women, yeah, Squeaky Fromm and the other. And then mother, I just wanted to make another comment. He had, about 130, 150 yards? He almost...
148.
So that's about twice the distance that Oswald had. Oswald was, about 70, 80 yards when he killed JFK.
Well, Oswald was also shooting through trees, and Oswald didn't have an assault weapon. And Oswald had a clear shot at Kennedy coming right to the school book depository and didn't take it. Why would Oswald wait unless it was going to be? I do think he was shooting. I agree with you there, Patrick, but I think somebody was also shooting from the grassy knoll and got off the kill shot on Kennedy. But let's not go there.
That's
for another day. But thank you. I think I hear what you're saying, but it's great to hear from Patrick. Paul in Opelousas. Paul, good morning.
Good morning, Jim, and good morning, Mr. Melanson.
Good morning.
Since the temperature, good morning, and we're trying to get the temperature down, you know, I'm going to get the temperature down without people acting too crazy, you know, everybody calm down. If Mr. Trump loses, what do we do in this country to keep it down?
I am fearful with this election and the rhetoric that's been spewed, not said, but spewed over up until now, unless it's tapped down for the remaining 16 weeks by both sides, I think it could be bad.
Charlie Melanson, let's bring you back soon, hopefully on a cheerier day, but certainly want to hear from you before the election. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you.
Back with Susie Terrell. This is Jim Inkster, and thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow producing. Your number is 877-217-5757. Emails are to talk@talklouisiana.org. We're joined by Suzanne Hike Terrell, first Republican woman to be elected statewide in Louisiana. Now we have two people who were elected last year who have taken the torch from her, Nancy Landry, the Secretary of State, and Liz Merle, the Attorney General. And Susie Terrell is a person who is the pride of New Orleans, as we know, and was Republican before being a GOP person in Louisiana was cool. And good morning to you, and belated happy birthday to Susie Terrell.
Thank you, and thank you, and belated congratulations on being inducted in the Louisiana Political Hall of Fame.
Well, and I was there. I was there last year when you were inducted, so that was a nice ceremony at the World War II Museum. Yeah, it is quite an honor. Thank you so much, and you are, of course, much more worthy than I. But Susie Terrell,
thank you.
Well, thanks, but you. Let's get it out of the way. One of your beautiful and talented and intelligent daughters worked for the Trump administration, and so I suspect you're speaking as somebody who, even before this horrific event Saturday, was supportive of the president, former president. But that said, how do you think the country? How do you think people are reacting who maybe we're sitting on the fence? Are they more inclined now to be supportive of former President Trump?
Well, you know, it's hard to figure that out, actually. I know that there's a lot of disgust, and I think probably on both sides, because politics is becoming so polarizing and personal, you know. And it's to the point where we forget that these people are human, and that in less than, 5 seconds, he could have been dead. And talk about a crisis, just an electoral crisis. I mean, a presidential crisis, of course, but an electoral crisis of who would be there to take the place. It would put us in the same position the Democrats are in if they decide what to do. You know, that Biden's not capable of running for president. But, you know, I think that there are some people that will turn to Trump because they're tired of the political rhetoric and hearing that Trump is a threat, to democracy.
Yeah, he's certainly been quite forceful himself in his words over the last 9 years, but he has an opportunity now. If he takes the high road in his speech Thursday night, I can't see him being defeated. I think he has an opportunity to rally the country if he's a good boy. But is he capable of that, Susie Terrell?
I think he probably is. I think we saw some of that right after this happened in some of his statements. He seemed to tone it down, and I think I did not see him last evening on television, but apparently he seemed, I don't want to say a little more human, but a little more tampered down from what I understand, a little more recognizing his vulnerability and his humanism, you know?
Well, there's only been 48 hours from Monday.
Yeah.
And there he was sitting in the crowd with a big bandage on his ear. And he was hit by a bullet from an assault weapon. So you can imagine his ear probably is in pretty bad shape. But on the whole, he has noted he's a fortunate person. Do you think this will, a listener asks, it's a legitimate question, will this perhaps intensify the call for a ban on assault weapons?
Oh, we haven't heard it, but I think there will be. We haven't heard it yet. I mean, there's been some hint of it on the Democratic side in some of their statements, but I think it's going to ramp up. And, you know, the interesting thing about this young man, this, I guess, 20-something, the guns were registered. They were bought legally. They were registered to his father, I think. So you start to wonder what, unless there's a complete ban on all firearms, things are going to happen. And it's hard to understand what the motivation behind this man was, because they haven't been able to find any. And he seems pretty much a loner. He's not Squeaky Frome or, the fellow who tried to shoot Reagan, John Hinckley. And I think that, I think there's a lot of reason also to tone down the rhetoric, because there's going to be the Republican convention, which I think will be more unified after this. I think the Democratic convention is going to still be facing what you had, maybe not as intense, but 1968, where there are going to be protests on Israel and protests on the war in the Ukraine and a lot of that going on. I think it's going to be a much more heated.
I think the Democratic Party is united in supporting Ukraine. They're not united on what's happening in Gaza. That is true, and that could be a source of protest. Yeah. And they're not united on Biden being the person to run against Donald Trump. So it could be a problem, but at this point, Donald Trump, at this point, 16 weeks out, would be the favorite against anybody. But that can change in 112 days.
Oh, yeah, it can change in 72 hours. You know, you never know. Anything can happen to shift around an election, and you never know what it's going to be.
Well, and a listener notes, it's kind of macabre, but and that's the concern the Secret Service has, is that, remember, 1968, on the fourth day of April, mm-hmm. Martin Luther King was killed, and then on the fourth day of June, Bobby Kennedy was killed. I would imagine both Biden and Trump know that there are people who saw this, and they see the attention that this young man is receiving in death, and they might want to replicate that, unfortunately. But I can't believe the Secret Service let their guard down to this point, because that guy had a clear shot at Donald Trump, and he basically had him dead if Trump had not turned his head.
Yeah, you know, I've been involved in setting up plenty of these things. I've been in the crowd. I've been on the stage. I've seen how these kinds of rallies operate, and I've always been very impressed with not just the Secret Service, but there's a lot of staff. My son-in-law and two of my daughters all did advance work for President Bush, and my eldest for Trump. And it's very impressive, and it's hard to understand how this fell, and especially how this fell when someone pointed out, there is someone on the top of that building, whether it was Secret Service or local or, you know, the line of communication. I don't know, because I have always been so impressed with the security at these things. This seems like such a fluke.
Well, 148 yards away is a little different than being next door. We're talking about a block away from where this kid was, but people did alert authorities 86 seconds before the shot, and they were not able to stop him. John on Florida, I know you've been waiting a while. John, I want to slide you in. Good morning. You're on with Susie Terrell, our former elections commissioner and former councilperson from the great city of New Orleans. Hi.
Good morning, sir. I just wanted to ask about it because there are shootings all over every day. And if, what is going to be done about gun control? Because I don't hear much. I don't even like to watch the news most of the time now, because every time I see the news, somebody is killed.
All right. Well, we have the Second Amendment. We're going to have handguns. And in our country, we've agreed as a people to have those available to protect ourselves. But assault weapons are weapons of war, and most Americans, both Republicans and Democrats, are against them, but yet the gun lobby is so pronounced, Susie Terrell, that they win the day. And I'm not sure this is going to change matters, and I'm not sure Donald Trump's going to change his opinion on it.
Well, I'm not sure this is going to change matters. I mean, we've had school shootings and all the, and I know it might not be the same level as a president, but it is terrible and it's massive. And, but I don't know that there's a will to outlaw the assault weapons. I just don't see that it's there. It's been brought up plenty of times, I think. And you'll know better than I. There was a time, maybe during Clinton.
Yeah, it was banned. It was banned, and then the ban was lifted. It had a sunset, and it was not put in place. But But it's a dangerous world.
The fact that it was banned. Yeah. No. Go ahead.
No, it's a dangerous world, and people who run for a public office as general civilians, school kids, as we know, hundreds of them in the United States have been mowed down to the point of being unrecognizable by an assault weapon. And as ghoulish as it sounds, if Trump had taken a headshot from an assault weapon, that video would not be shown. It would be too ghoulish for the American people.
Oh, no. I mean, you saw the reconstruction of what it would have looked like if he had not turned his head. And it was definitely a kill shot at that point.
Well, Susie Terrell, it is an honor to talk with you as always. And the pride of Tulane, Loyola, New Orleans, and Baton Rouge. Thanks. Let's do it again soon. Thank you. See you soon. Bye-bye. This is Jim Inkster, and thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. We're joined now by Fred Frommer, a contributor to the Washington Post. Fred has been a journalist with varied interests that are all prominent in American life now. He created an innovative beat on the intersection of sports and public policy and covered the environment and federal courts. And he is here to talk about his latest piece in the Washington Post regarding the malaise speech of Jimmy Carter 45 years ago. Jimmy Carter, the 39th American president, was seeking re-election. And on July 15th, 1979, now 45 years and one day ago, he delivered a speech that was the beginning of the end of his presidency. It was not received well. And here is a sampling Robin Dow has pulled from Jimmy Carter when he went before the nation to talk about a crisis of confidence.
It is a crisis of confidence. It is a crisis that strikes at the very heart and soul and spirit of our national will. We can see this crisis in the growing doubt about the meaning of our own lives and in the loss of a unity of purpose for our nation. the erosion of our confidence in the future.
Well, Jimmy Carter on that night did not convey strength, and it's called the malaise speech. He never used that word, but Americans like mourning in America. They like presidents who show strength, and Jimmy Carter did not. And as we know, a year and a few months later, he was sent home to Plains, Georgia, carrying only six states, against Ronald Reagan, who at the time was thought to be a weak candidate, the candidate Carter wanted to run against. He got him and he lost. Now, Frederick Frommer, that speech certainly has resonance today because once again, we have a Democratic presidential aspirant, the nominee to be of the party, the current president, Joe Biden, who, according to many in his own ranks, is not showing strength. Your thoughts about how Carter's dilemma of 1979 is applicable to Biden's challenges in 2024?
Yeah, well, they're both pretty unpopular incumbents. I think Carter even more so. The thing I find most striking in the similarities between the two is that you hear Democrats, of course, talking about a fundamental threat to democracy, which is, they say, former President Trump poses. In this speech that Carter gave, as you point out rightly, it was known as the malaise speech, but he really had a line in there that I found striking, which is he said this crisis of confidence that you had played, that posed a fundamental threat to American democracy. And he wasn't talking about it, any individual people, obviously, but he was talking more about the fact that we don't have crisis in our institutions, in government, in schools, even in religion. And he really, it was almost like a knock at the, I don't know if you're old enough to remember the me decade, but that's what it was called back there in the 70s. The people were self-absorbed in his prescription with personal gain and possessions, that type of thing, rather than the deep-rooted connections and community that he thought were much more important.
Well, I can see a lot of parallels, and I do remember the 70s. I am old enough, but...
Good.
But... the parallels between Carter and Biden. Carter, like Biden, a decent man, and I think history has shown an underrated president. But you got to show the American people that you like the job, that you're not tortured, that you're not challenged by the rigors of the job. And I think both Carter and Biden, it may be fair to say that at times they showed that they were perplexed by what was going on in the world. Is that fair?
I think so, in much different ways, of course. Back in Carter's era, I think there was a perception he was overwhelmed by events. And this was, keep in mind, a few months before the Iran hostage crisis, it would only get worse for him. But there was this sense that the Soviet Union was on the march. And interestingly, I wrote a story recently about the Ford 1976 debate with Carter. He made that famous gaffe Ford did where he said there was no Soviet domination of Eastern Europe. And what I found interesting is before that, Carter really got him on his heels because he said that the United States was weak. And he actually borrowed a lot of the lines that Ronald Reagan was using in the primary, had used in the primary against Ford, that the United States was weak, that no one takes us seriously, that we were selling out a lot in these peace deals with the Soviet Union. When by the time he became president, he was on the receiving end of a lot of that criticism. I think Biden's a little different because there was the issue of his age and perhaps his cognitive abilities. Carter was a much younger man. But Carter is still alive now. I think he's about to turn 100.
Yeah.
But there are some similarities between they both seem like the presidents that were definitely on the defensive.
Carter, if he makes it on to October 1st, will be the first president to make 100 years. And to put it in perspective, when he was elected in 1976, he was 52 years old, and then he was in his mid-50s when he delivered that speech. But he was a generation younger than Biden is right now, and Carter evolved. I recall that race against Ford. Carter made not only the lust in my heart mistake. Who would advise a president now to do an interview with Playboy magazine about sex?
Right.
But he did it, and it backfired. And he also, at one point, said that he was in favor of ethnic purity in neighborhoods. that he did not like race mixing, ethnic mixing. He liked ethnic purity, and that showed he was a man born in 1924. And he had thoughts that took a while. Go ahead.
He was around a conservative race that year. It was sort of striking to see today. A conservative, an outsider. The ethnic purity thing was really just so shocking to today's ears, and I think to a lot of people that he was back in the 70s. And the really incredible thing is that he didn't apologize for several days. I mean, I think today's era of X and other social media, you wouldn't be able to get by without an apology within a couple hours. But he wrote that out for a few days and finally kind of grudgingly said that, you know, he's offended, people were offended, something like that. But yeah, it was kind of an amazing comment for a Democrat. Of course, he was a Southern Democrat, as you pointed out, born in 1924, different era. So it is pretty striking, but he did certainly evolve and became really kind of a champion of civil rights as president, certainly post-presidency.
877-217-5757 in the remaining moments with Frederick Frommer of the Washington Post. And a listener notes, this is Holly in the Garden District in that speech in 19. Actually, this was a debate. This was a Reagan debate when he said it. 1980, remember he talked about how he discussed nuclear, and he said nuclear. Here was a guy who's a nuclear engineer, and he couldn't pronounce nuclear.
Is that right?
He said nuclear proliferation with his daughter, Amy. and that debate performance torpedoed his reelection chances. He had been on the rise, and the Gallup poll had him actually moving a little ahead of Reagan. And then the debate, and boom, it was over.
I make a quick point about how Reagan was considered a likely weak candidate. Ford, at the beginning of 1980, he wanted to make a political comeback, and he gave an interview in the New York Times, ran on the front page, where he essentially invited Republican leaders to draft him to run. And he said, if Reagan is a candidate, there is no chance we will lose in a landslide. He's too far right. Of course, the exact opposite happened. So it just proves you can never really know in American politics. It will always surprise you.
Well, earlier, I think I may have alluded to Trump being the first celebrity president. Well, obviously, Reagan was a celebrity president. He had been governor of California for two terms. But knowing how to work the media and convey strength, whether it's real or not, matters. And Reagan against Carter is somewhat analogous to Trump against Biden.
I think that's going to be the way certainly the Republicans portray it. You know, certainly the assassination attempt, that only will reinforce the idea that Republicans will try to make that Trump is the alpha male in this race. Coming out of that with his fist raised and yelling, fight, fight, there's just no way that doesn't help him in that regard. So I think that's going to help reinforce that narrative.
Is there any way Biden can pull it out?
I'd say so. I think it's a long shot at this point, but you never say never in politics.
No, things happen. And Trump is a person who, as we know, has not been able to handle prosperity very well. And he has, despite the fact that a life was taken and his own life, by all rights, should have been taken.
Yeah.
He's a person who sometimes steps on his own situation, and he's got a chance here to unite the country. But I have some doubts that he will. And instead, we may have more division than ever. That's what Peter Baker of the New York Times predicted on the front page yesterday. How do you see the country handling this?
I guess I'm a little more optimistic than most. I think that sometimes these events can be kind of society shattering and maybe in a good way. I mean, you've seen a lot of partisan commentary from Republicans. You haven't seen much from Trump himself. He's been incredibly restrained. And, you know, it is possible that a life-altering event like this, like nearly coming within an inch or less of being assassinated, can change his personality. I'm not saying it's certainly a long shot, but it's a possibility. And if he does go with a speech of unity, you know, we'll see. But things are pretty divided. And I'm not old enough to remember the late 60s. I don't know if you are, but I think that was the time where you could think that was probably the nadir of division in modern America. And I don't know if we're there yet, but I sure hope we're not.
Well, and I hope this isn't a harbinger of things to come. I hope that this was an aberration that will not be repeated, but there is a concern, and justifiably so.
Right, absolutely. Hope it's a one-off.
But the Malay speech probably was the beginning of the end for James Earl Carter as president, but he is now regarded, and I think justifiably so, as the greatest ex-president. Thank you, Fred Frommer. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much. Good to talk to you.
Back tomorrow. Stay safe. Stay tuned.